I'm Brad Manila, and my favorite thing is DJing.
Welcome to the Finding Favorites podcast, where we explore your favorite things without using an algorithm. Here's your host, Leah Jones.
Hi there. Welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones. As the introductory voiceover says, I'm recording this on Friday, July 10th, and I'm going to share with you an interview from June. From almost a whole month ago, I think June 14th is when we recorded this episode. This week, I am talking with Brad Manila. We are talking about how he became a DJ, even though he is a recovering entrepreneur and a UX designer, which means user experience. It's a role on a team of people developing a website, who helps make sure that the users, the buttons and forms and things are where users expect them to be. You're going to hear Brad and I talk about how we met many years ago, ice skating at Millennial Park with our friend Patty Morrissey, who is a super connector and invited us both and along with some other folks out for a night of ice skating, which is something that would terrify me today. And after that ice skating bit, we tried and failed to pull together some events, maybe some storefront events that didn't work out. But we stayed connected through Facebook, through email. We'll talk about Brad's email list and how that came about. But mostly this is a really wonderful conversation, learning how Brad became someone who, how he went from this path of liking hip hop and liking the how bass felt, how a really good bass could feel in speakers, to being a DJ who specializes in sampling and bringing forward underground hip hop into his work, and as someone trying to introduce people to new music. So it's just a really fascinating conversation. I really enjoyed it because I have never thought about what goes in to making a DJ set. The closest I got to ever DJing was I had like three mixed CDs in college and after college, and sometimes I would get to work the CD player at a party, it kind of has different RAs, different resident assistants tried to get a sober party going in a lounge. That's how what I know about DJing. I think that DJing has a lot in common with the art of stand-up comedy, which is you mix some beats and you play some songs together and you see how the room reacts. And then the next time you play those, you might make adjustments. And so there's a lot of paying attention to the room, making adjustments, perfecting your set over time. And then eventually you release a mixtape or an album. Hope you enjoy this conversation with Brad Manila and learning what makes a DJ become a DJ. So go and enjoy your favorite things. Stay safe, stay home. Hello and welcome to Finding Favorites. I'm your host, Leah Jones, and today I am joined by Brad Manila. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm good. So to set some stage, because my goal is to start releasing these in June of 2020. It is June 16th, 2020. We are 3 or 4 months into the COVID shutdown, and I would say 2 weeks into the George Floyd protests, the Black Lives Matter protests, and have just hit the first really beautiful stretch of summer days in Chicago.
And people are losing their minds.
People are truly losing their minds. So Brad and I met maybe 8 or 10 years ago.
I think it's like 10 or 11. Like, I was thinking about that. Like, it's definitely, I think it's like 2009.
Yeah.
Or something around there.
Oh, that's more than 10 years. That's real weird.
I know.
So we have a common friend, Patty Morrissey, and we all went ice skating in Millennial Park.
First time I've ever done that. Yeah. It was, I just got this like random invite from her. She's like, hey, we're going down with some friends. It's like, okay, I've never done that. Let's do it.
And it was a fun night, and we've been Facebook friends and have each other's email addresses, and you are now a DJ, and you sent out a couple mixes for the summer to kind of for this quarantine season, the COVID season. And it was like the week I decided to do a podcast, and I replied and I was like, well, we haven't seen each other in many years, but do you want to be on a podcast? And he said, yeah, yes.
What was crazy is that I had just gone through and edited all of my contacts, because, you know, like when I first started out, I was just like, anybody that I know or have met, like I'll send it out. And I was like, all right, that was put together like 10 years ago. So I'm going to refine this into the people that I think would like this. And I remember getting to your name and I was like, okay, we went ice skating that one time and haven't really kept in touch. I'm like, I'm just going to leave her in. I think she might like it, but I'm not sure. And then got your email. And I was like, okay, there we go. I'm glad that I did. So
yeah. Worth listening to your intuition.
Yeah, exactly. So
how has the spring been for you?
It's been okay. I mean, like with the quarantining, it's, you know, just kind of staying indoors and juggling, a child that's not in daycare while we're both trying to work. So that's like, some expert mode, parenting that we're playing this game right now. So, but we're looking forward to like even just being able to go outside and, you know, enjoy the sun, So yeah, it's, you know, I think we're all collectively adjusting to the new normal in our own ways. But yeah, I mean, we can't complain. We could have it a lot worse. So got to keep that in perspective.
I live in a 6-flat now in Ravenswood with two of my neighbors have toddlers. And so thankfully we have a yard. But I know that everyone is grateful that they can just now spend the day outside, because it seems like the first couple months were just brutal.
Yeah. And our son Ron was, he was actually pretty good. He was keeping himself entertained, or at least like we were entertaining him, and he was totally content. And only like, I'd say this week, he's really kind of hit a wall where it's like, okay, I need to get out of here. So yeah, I think that could have happened a lot sooner if he was, you know, a little bit older. Because you have a concept of what you're missing,
right?
Rather than, you know, this almost 2-year-old who doesn't really know what's going on and, you know, has his toys around them. It's like, oh, that's fine, whatever.
Yeah, the concept of the podcast is to talk to people about their favorite thing and get algorithm-free recommendations, because so much of what we watch, what we listen to, what we buy is because Amazon, Netflix, Google, the algorithm said, this is what you're going to like. But I still turn to my friends for recommendations on whether it's a purse, a movie, a book. I would just much rather have a recommendation from a real person. And I have found when you look at like maybe one piece of media that you really love, it so often takes you down a path, multiple paths of different things that you also like. So what is it we're going to talk about today? What's your favorite thing?
Well, my favorite thing is definitely DJing. So I've been doing it for a while now. My stage name is DJ Sporklebone, which I have a hard time saying with a straight face, but we can dig into that later. And it's just for me a great means of escape. You know, you can just zone in to the music. You know, you've got the headphones on, and you're just able to explore and like play as a kid. You know, like how often as adults do we kind of have that childlike wonder, or the, you know, those moments of just like playing around. Everything seems to be very focused and task oriented. And so, for me, it's an escape from that. And, yeah, you know, it's just, it's just a nice outlet, you know, being able to, like, we're always hunched over working on the computer, so being able to, like, stand up, actually touch something physical. I'm still using a computer to find certain songs, but that tactile experience is really nice. And I think that's where you see a lot of people who are younger, like, getting into vinyl now, even though it's, like, crazy, you know, it's expensive and it's inconvenient. But I think there's, as everything is shifted into the digital realm, there's this, like, craving of something, like, physical and tangible, and there's, like, artifacts of that, you know?
So when you DJ in the before times, were you performing live at bars and clubs, or are you more mixing? Are you mixing and recording sets at home? Like,
yeah. So I was doing more like parties, you know, house parties. The last place that I lived at had this amazing backyard that was like just this paradise in Chicago. It was crazy. And so, my best friend, Anthony Bernis, lived across the yard. So, you know, we shared the space, and he's actually the one I started, Let's Gabble with.
Got it.
And so we would throw these parties, and I would do the music, he would do the food, and we just have everybody out, you know, having a great time. And so, that was really what I liked doing. I started to like kind of creep into the DJ scene in terms of like, let's try out a wedding. Let's try a birthday party. Let's try a bar. And I hated it. I was just like, cause it was very much, I held myself to a very high standard. Mm-hmm. So it was incredibly stressful to go through this. And the first wedding that I did, was for a great couple, but I remember when I was meeting with her, she's like, you know, I'm not the type of girl that ever thought about myself going down the aisle, or, you know, the only thing that I pictured was the songs I'd be dancing to. And I'm like, okay, cool.
She's never imagined anything except for the thing you're going to spend 4 hours doing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Having never done that long of a set, and, you know, the music that you're playing for a wedding is very different than what you're playing for your friends in your backyard. And
absolutely.
So I was just like, you know, clawing at, you know, some Motown and funk and anything that I could get my hands on, and start like building a library that was appropriate for the job. And what we ended up absolutely crushing it. She was like, this was amazing. I had like uncles that never, ever get up, or that were out on the dance floor and stuff like that. But, you know, after doing it, it was just exhausting. And I was like, you know, the week leading up to it, I'm just like a nervous wreck. And so, it was, I could see it transitioning from hobby to a job. And as that shifts more towards the job realm, you're really just playing almost 100% of what other people want. You know, you're not able to just kind of explore some stuff that you want while also sprinkling in some stuff that they want to kind of keep their attention, but also try and expose them to new stuff.
Right.
You know? And especially when you're going to bars, a lot of that is just like, you know, the top 40, you know, like just play the songs that we all know, and we just want to shake our butts and get down, you know? So yeah, it's like, man, if you just want to do that, you might as well just throw in a playlist, you know, because you're not paying attention to the transitions or anything. Yeah,
so when you DJed that first wedding, where in the world of like technology from, I'm going to set up my iPod and plug it in, and that's going to be my wedding music, to a Spotify playlist that people can contribute to. So like, where was consumer technology at? Can you think of that versus like, I mean, I think the value of a DJ, the value of a band to me is always obvious, that someone is reading the room and making changes appropriately and seeing what gets people moving and what changes the vibe, and what you're competing against is the technology available to the bride and groom. So what technology did the bride and groom, or bride and bride, sorry, have available to them at that time?
So when I met her, I went down to see the space. I think it was at St. Ignatius, the high school downtown by UIC. And I got her iPod, and she had a list of stuff that she wanted. And I just kind of scraped that. And that was kind of a basis for which to build out the rest of what, you know, I thought needed to be there to entertain everyone. You know, so okay. you start with their core, you start to listen that to what they like, and then you get a sense for, like, okay, so you're like indie rock, kind of upbeat, not so much like singer songwriter. You're like a little bit into hip hop, but you're not going like too crazy. So I know I need to flush that out with songs that complement the songs that are your favorites,
right?
That are maybe going to surprise you, and but also like try and mix in some other stuff that your guests are going to like as well. And so that was really interesting, because when, you know, like DJing can be very, very humbling, where you spend all this time creating these lists and you're ready to go out, and then as you're playing stuff, you could see that the crowd's not responding how you want, and you have to throw out the plan and like just pivot right there. And you know, that's a very it's a big challenge. And you can't, it's almost like that notion of like failing fast. Like you can't get mad at them for not receiving you. You just have to accept it and move on. And so like I remember at her wedding, one of the things that I was planning on doing was, you know, we were switching from modern music to modern, you know, kind of upbeat pop, whatever, and then trying to get to that Motown, either upbeat or like mm-hmm. maybe a slow song. And that's a really hard transition. Or like, I guess for some of those, I would just, you know, hard cut into like, or, you know, announce that we're going to have a slower song or whatever. But then to ramp back up, I thought that you could go from Motown to funk to modern music. And funk would be this bridge of starting to like kind of build. It's like throwback, but you know, you're starting to like, funk is a huge source of samples for hip hop. So like, I thought that was like going to be the bridge.
Yeah.
And I could not have been more wrong. It was crazy. Like I would play the Motown, or I play the Motown stuff, and then everyone was out, like young and old were out and dancing and stuff, and it was crazy. And then I would play the funk song, and the entire floor would clear.
Oh, brutal.
And I was like, what? Okay. All right. New song. And like get this next song queued up really fast and get it out there. And then, you know, the young people would come back out, and I was like, oh God. And so it took me like, I think I did it two or three times, because I was like, maybe it was just that song.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you're like, I'm a user experience designer. So you're like, you're trying to like watch and receive feedback and trying to figure out what it is that they're kind of giving you.
What is it about the funk that's not bringing it to this wedding?
I had no idea. And maybe it's just that song. I've got another song that's going to be crazy. I'm going to do this. Same thing. And I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. Like I have to just, I don't know why, but this is the song that everyone chooses to like go sit down or go take a smoke break or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, so this genre is just off limits. So I'm going to have to figure out a different way to do this in that, you know, in that moment. So
it's so interesting. Cause when I'm 43, which meant I was in high school in college and peak mixtape, like physical mixtapes. And I would make my list, and I would do a 5-point scale, and I would rank songs. I don't know what I thought 1 through 5 meant.
Yeah.
But I would jump like a 1 to a 3, but not a 1 to a 4, like a 1 to a 4 took a 3
nice.
Or a 2. And then, so then I would like write out my song list with my numbers next to it and make sure like the jump wasn't too much for it. So
that's awesome. That's way more thought than I think most people would give. They're just like, this is my summer jams 2005.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not saying I didn't have some that were just summer jam mixtapes, but the Secret Romantic Letters to Crushes, those were very carefully, okay. You know.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting how, like, those mixtapes were, it was like a personalized, like, love note in a way, you mm-hmm. know, that you could get to somebody where, like, here's some music that's special to me. I hope it is special to you.
Yeah.
And then sneaking in some songs that are secretly talking to them in their brain as they're listening to this, like, lovely.
So maybe one more technical question about how you DJ today. So podcasts are an audio medium, so people can't see that behind you. You've got some LP covers on the wall. Do you DJ with vinyl, or how do you?
I transitioned away from it because actually the vinyl on the wall is just like a kind of an art project where okay. So this is actually kind of crazy. Like 12 years ago, I was down at the library and they were getting rid of all of their, or like a lot of their LPs. And so they were like literally $1 each. And so I bought 100 of them or 120 of them just by color of the album. So I went from like blues to greens.
Okay.
And so my thought was in the future, at a certain point, I could make a gradient of that kind of look like EQs, you know, how the EQs yeah. have the bars that come up for, and so I have, what I have over here is a variety of bars that are kind of spiking, and it starts from one side in blue and it slowly fades to green on the other. And nice. It's also darkest on the bottom and fades to light on the top. So, actually that's a quarantine project that I officially did.
Well done.
Yeah, I've been sitting around. It's like, okay, well, actually, I can actually do this. But in terms of the hardware, so I came in and I started with the Technic 1200s and the, you know, like real vinyl, and it was at a time where, you know, the online, like being able to get MP3s and like the albums that I was like downloading onto my computer and stuff. I was so organized on my computer right. and able to pull up anything immediately that I hadn't made the huge investment into a physical library. Mm-hmm. And when you're pricing it out, you're talking about, you know, $20, $15 to $30 an album or whatever it is. And you're just like thinking about that in the long-term storage and just like what it would take to actually do that, even going somewhere and like having to like pick through it. And, you know, like if I was at that wedding and I had the funk mishap, yeah. then to like, you know, scramble to find something, like you have to have a very like mental map of where every your album. Stuff is.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's no like ability to organize a playlist, you know, like you have physical albums and you have to like keep that in your head. Or write it down.
Yeah.
And so to me, that became very, very daunting. And it was right at the point where I could take my computer, plug it into kind of an interface, and that allowed me to interface directly with the Technics.
And are the Technics the like digital turntables?
Those are like the old school like the pro level DJs, but what they actually had was just really, really crazy. Was they had a vinyl that was literally just a series of beeping codes. Mm-hmm. So like it sounded like you know, like an old school modem. So if yeah. you actually just listened to it, it would just sound like, and so, But what the computer knew was when that specific tone was playing, it knew a timestamp. So you could, on the computer, say, I want you to play this MP3. And then on the actual turntable, I could scratch and it would look at the timestamp moving and it would manipulate the MP3 to match that. And so it was seamless.
That's wild.
It was so crazy that they could actually do that. When that, you know, had just come out, as I was looking into this, I was like, this is the future. I'm going to build on this rather than, a crazy, vinyl library. And so, I remember seeing at the time I went to an event and there was a guy that was mixing music and he had zip drives. He had like five zip drives and like 100 zip disks around.
No.
And I was like, who in the hell is this dude? Why would you ever do this? And then I found out later that he was one of the guys from Thievery Corporation, who like is an awesome group. And I was like, wait, that's what happens when you have this perfect arrangement, but the technology changes.
Yeah.
And it's so much more of a lift to get your music to the next level when you're like, whatever, I'm fine. Like, I don't do this enough to justify the huge amount of time it would take to overhaul that. So having seen that and kind of thought about it in my present state, I was like, okay, I'm going to go with the MP3 setup with the computer as the interface, but I still like having the physical vinyl to manipulate. I don't play as many house parties, but for me, like my deliverable is mixtapes. You know, yeah. I like the creative process of coming up with a concept, mm-hmm. and then starting to listen to songs to see if they fit, or dig into the stuff that I already have and like get this grouping that loosely fits around that concept, and then just start playing with them and seeing like what's the pattern that starts to emerge, you know, kick those ones out that don't, and then really kind of tighten that up and get it to a point where it's published. But it's like, for me, the mixtapes are like a branding experience.
Okay. You know,
like I'm trying to.
So the mixtape is a DJ Sparkle Bomb experience.
Yes. Yeah. And so like, I have a background in branding. And so for me, like, this is just like my skill set for work just in a new medium.
Yeah.
You know? And so what I wanted to, like, for example, one of the playlists that I really like, or sets I really like, is Infinity Pools. And so for me, like, that concept came from when we were on our honeymoon in Thailand, and you know, like you're in this infinity pool and you're in this vacation and you're like, I just don't want this to end. You know,
yeah.
Like, when I was back in the States, I was like, okay, I want to create something that kind of transports you to that place. I want like endless summer vibes.
Yeah.
You know, like, so how can I come, you know, about, you know, like making that. And so then starting to look at like, okay, I want songs that maybe have some of the, you know, like the Jamaican drums, like that's
the kettle drums, the steel drums. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, you know, like looking for songs that have some of that vibe and then building out around that. And when I was DJing it, I was playing more of the song than I normally do, because I wanted you to kind of sink into each song and then transition to the next, so that you have a slower tempo versus like, if I was going to play something that's like more amped, I'm dropping in a new song every like minute and a half, to just kind of keep the energy up. Whereas this is like the exact opposite. So it's like, all right, let's play a little bit more of the songs. And then the final thing is like creating album art, you know, using my graphic design skills to create something that mimics the vibe that I'm trying to to put out, because
it's so interesting. Because I listen to stand-up comics talk about how they write jokes, because some of them write on stage, some of them write in a book, or they do like a combination where they've got a couple riffs and they're going to go on stage and see what people react to. They're going to record it. They're going to listen back. They're going to make a transcript. And it's so interesting to me that how you're talking about going in to DJ a set is so much of what I hear from a stand-up comic about how they're going to work on a new 5-minute chunk.
That's interesting. There's probably a lot more fear and rejection that they have to deal with. So I'm in my little safe space in my headphones. I can't hear the hecklers. But yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about that.
Because I don't think I ever imagined that part of DJing is working up a set list that you might play more than once. I just had never.
Well, I think it's different for different people. I think some people, I think if you're someone that maybe has a gig where you're playing maybe 3 nights a week at a particular bar, and you're doing that and that's your job, and you're going to be doing that all the time, you probably have a pretty active set of songs to pull from, and you might just be more kind of freewheeling it and just kind of going with the flow, reading the crowd. I think for me, like my goal and end is the end deliverable, which is that mixtape, you know, cause I also want something that, I want an artifact that both I can enjoy, but you can enjoy as well. For me, like once I started getting introduced to like some underground hip hop and like how hard it was for these guys to break out.
Right.
Because it's really hard to get yourself played. And like Clear Channel owns most of all everything. The radio stations.
Yeah.
So you got to pay to play. And if you are new, you can't. So that was, that was another thing where like for me, having been exposed to that, like my goal or my like contribution to, the music scene is to try and promote these different artists, And so that's why if you go on my website, you'll see I have my mix, but then I also have the full set list and then links to all of their stuff, all of the different songs I use in Spotify or iTunes. The ultimate goal is like, here, I'm your introduction into your new favorite music. Now go and kind of explore. I went to this music festival in Cincinnati called Scribble Jam. And that was like eye-opening because it was... we so often just hear like the small portion of hip hop that is rap.
Yeah.
And specifically more like party rap. And so, cause that's what gets played, 90% of the time. But like hip hop is a much larger breadth of just different elements. There's graffiti, there's breakdancing, there's MC battles, there's beatboxing, And being able to actually like go and see that and experience that was crazy. And so I was buying like 40 CDs every year, and then would kind of whittle that down to the best mix that I could make on a CDR prior to actually.
I remember them. Yep.
So I had like 70 minutes, and I was at this time I wasn't actually DJing. I was just trying to make a killer mixtape. And then, giving those out to my friends to be like, go check these people out. They're awesome. I felt cheated that I hadn't heard of any of them, So that was kind of crazy.
So you might have, just backed into the next big question, which is how did you get to DJing? How did you find out that this is this thing you love? So we talked about that some of your first events of DJing were house parties, your own house, you're on the deck, your friends are in the backyard. But what got you to the point where you wanted to try that? Was it the mixtapes, the Best of Scribble Fest mixtapes you made? So like what got you there?
Well, what's kind of crazy is that like growing up, I didn't really, I was totally indifferent to music. I didn't really care about it. I grew up listening to my parents would put on Raffi when we were like little and like, you know, Sesame Street and all that stuff. And so like, as I grew up, I grew out of that and my parents didn't really listen to a lot of music. So I just kind of put the TV on in the background and like, that I didn't really have much of a relationship with it.
So no instruments, no music lessons.
I mean, it was like saxophone, but like I did saxophone because I didn't want to do chorus. I wasn't really drawn to it. The only thing that like I was fascinated with bass, like the ability
like
to
upright bass or
no, like just the ability to feel bass. You know, like okay. You know, kind of coming out from like a hip hop song, and that to me blew my mind in like third grade, putting on like a crisscross tape or something and just like watching these cones vibrate and being able to feel it in my skull. I was just like mesmerized and it was like transformative, but like more from like a physics of what is happening. How is this even possible?
Yeah.
Then like I need to find more of this, you know? And so it wasn't until I would say even in high school, you know, I just wanted something in my car that would like thump heavy bass. Uh-huh. So I didn't have a relationship with the lyrics or anything like that. And so it was very superficial. And so it was when I went to Scribble Jam and was exposed to the breadth of hip hop and also just,
So how do you get to Scribble Jam? You go to Scribble Jam looking for
I got invited, I'm always like open to going to concerts and stuff like that. Usually like tagging along. It was like this mecca of I'm fascinated with graffiti. The entire parking lot is covered in cement walls and they've been partitioned off in 10-foot segments. And there's hundreds of graffiti artists just doing crazy designs. And to me, that was like, that just blew my mind to see that. And it was a 3-day event. So you got to see it progress over the 3 days. You got to go out and talk to people. Everyone, you know, they would go on and perform, you know, if you were like an artist there, you go perform, but then you go and just kind of hang out with people in the audience and then go sell merch. And you could like talk to people and like, it was the first time that like, I felt the fullness of the community and I, some of the lyrics that they were like epic storytellers. And up until that point, it was just kind of like, hey, you know, let's shake your butt. Let's get some money. Like, and so like go from what I was in, anticipating to what I actually saw, it just blew my mind. I'm like, oh my God, I can relate to this. This is crazy. They're, you know, like they're telling about their hardships or like being vulnerable or whatever. And like that to me really sparked the interest in it.
There's a really good Ira Glass quote that I come back to and that I've come back to as I've started doing these interviews for the podcast. And he's talking about in it, when your taste and your ability don't match, you start doing something because you love it. You go up and you do stand-up comedy because you've watched all these hours of stand-up comedy and you think you can do it. You start DJing because you believe you have a story to tell with music. I started a podcast because I needed an indoor hobby for the rest of this pandemic. But I also listen to hours of podcasts every week. And so my taste and what I expect from a podcast is way up here. And my ability, we're finding out to simply plug in a microphone, is low. I'm working on it. I'm working on all the details. But I think it takes a level of self-awareness to look at a thing you want to do and recognize it's not just a dollar investment to get there. It's also a time investment. And is the time you have for this new hobby going to match the money that you need to spend to get into it?
Yeah. And I think that the time is more valuable than the money.
Yeah.
You know, like we're so slammed these days that that's the most valuable currency. And so it truly is just something that it just does take time. You know, you're slowly building on a skill set, and it's impossible to do that without failure. Right. You're going to keep failing,
yep,
but you keep failing forward, you know? And so it's actually better to, like, you know, fail fast and just learn from it. And like, as a designer, I'm used to doing that. And that's like a trained thing. You know, I'm going to come up with 8 concepts. We're going to show them to the client, and they're going to rip them apart.
Yeah.
And then take, you know, the 2 or 3 that I didn't anticipate them taking.
Right.
You know, and so you just have to divorce yourself from the concept. They're not rejecting you. They're rejecting the concept, and that's fine. It's just a concept. The more that you get into something, or the more that you learn, the more that you read, that you start to understand,
yep,
how much stuff you don't know.
Yeah.
It's like that humbling. I feel like everybody comes out of like college and they're just like, I'm at peak knowledge. I know more than my parents about a specific thing. And like, I know everything. And they come at this with like a bravado that is unearned. I mean, I'm talking of myself included in this. This is just other people. And then, you know, when you get to like late 20s or early 30s, you start to actually, if you're in your particular industry, you start to understand the nuances of everything,
right,
and the interconnectivity and the dependencies. And you're like, oh my God, like this is huge. And that is truly humbling. And you kind of like knock yourself down, and it's like a slow build back up, you know, over the next couple of decades.
Yeah. And you start to recognize that the unknown quadrant is vast. And being able to admit there's things that you don't know, but that you want to know, that would be helpful, I think is just part of growing up. It's part of self-awareness is to be able to recognize that. Once you got to DJing, what are some of the things that it has taken you to? Adventures, people you've met, cool, I don't know, like where has learning to DJ, loving the process, where has that taken you?
I mean, I think the biggest thing has been just like a genuine love for music. You know, coming from someone that really did not care about it at all. And like when Disney movies came on, I was like, walk out of the room, I'm like, oh, interrupting the plot with a song again. You know, like, it was ridiculous. Like, so like it's really 180 degree turn. It's bizarre. But I think for me, like the biggest thing is that it really did introduce me to music. And so I started very narrow, you know, like I started in like party rap just because I wanted to experience bass. And then I got exposed to underground hip hop, and I, you know, and it was storytelling and something, you know, like kind of more meaning there. And then as I was exploring hip hop further, I was seeing elements of like, they're pulling in a little bit of electronic vibes in here, or like they're pulling in a little bit of rock in here. And that, so then all of a sudden I was looking at hip hop with these elements of other genres, but then I slowly crept into those other genres.
Okay. Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, you know, like I'm really kind of well versed in playing around with hip hop and and weird intersections that happen that really shouldn't happen, or that, that seems like it seems counterintuitive that they would happen, but that seem to like work really well, and like the combination of the two is, you know, greater than the sum of their parts. And that's actually like where my DJ name kind of comes from, you know, because my DJ name is Sparkle Bomb. And so if you think about the two words, sparkle and bomb, sparkle is like this very like dainty, delicate, like as a male, emasculating thing, you know, and then bomb is like the exact opposite. It's like, you know, war and death and like testosterone rage. And so you've got these two forces that are opposed with one another, but together somehow that intersection makes something, you know, larger than it is.
Yeah.
And so like I like exploring those weird intersections, because you end up finding just some crazy stuff out of it. So, and also like the name for me was a check at my entrepreneurial spirit of like, hey, we're gonna play all over the place and blah blah blah. And you know, it's a bit, I wanted to self-contain and to keep this a hobby. And so it's a little hard to pitch to somebody like, hey, yeah, I can DJ for you. You know, the name's Sparkle Bomb, you know, like a straight face, because you get judged real hard by about 50% of people.
And
by
so like, you were essentially putting a governor on your ability to turn a hobby into a side hustle by embarrassing yourself with your own name.
Pretty much. It was just kind of a funny thing of, and it's memorable. So you definitely don't forget it.
It makes me feel or hear like a really good firework when it crackles in the sky.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that to me, like when I hear Sparkle Bomb, I hear the crackling of a nice firework.
I like that. I like that.
Would you ever remix one of your Scribble Fest mixtapes?
Or? I actually thought about that, because I don't even have the mixes that I made, the mixtapes I made from Scribble Jam, because at that time I was just burning CDRs, you know, and it had the name of whatever, summer or whatever. And I mean, at some point I just like tossed it, because I'm like, well, whatever. But like, I was thinking about that, where I feel like for how large underground hip hop has been as an influence to me, that I don't have a lot of representation of that on my website and my current mixes, because when I started actually DJing and turntables, my friend Scott Danzero, who actually lent me his turntables so I can actually, and his entry point for me was more stuff that was like electronic bass. Because I could, you know, it's very easy to hear like the repetitive pattern do 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 do, and to match that up than it is like for hip hop in general. It's better in my mind if you could scratch stuff in and drop it, and like that stuff is harder. Like that's a, you know, there's great famous DJs that don't even do that, and so for me, I had to almost like, even though my focus and my catalog is super deep in underground hip hop, I had to kind of shift a little bit more into like electronica to just learn the platform.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's only, you know, now after a long time that I feel a bit more confident about like, okay, now I can actually, you know, spin these in a little bit, and it's not even crazy, but it's pretty solid. And like underground hip hop too, it's not party based, you know, so it might be extra hard to transition from, you know, song to song. So I think that's actually one of the, once I get the kind of my backlog out, that's going to be one of the things I'll revisit, because that was such a crucial influence to me, that I think that it would be really nice to have that represented. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's been fun having this conversation, because like the last 2 weeks weeks, I've just kind of been forced to think about the journey almost like an out-of-body experience, you know, like looking at myself as an abstract concept, or not abstract concept, but like as a series of interconnected events,
right?
And trying to understand those dependencies.
Yeah, of getting on the balcony and looking and saying, "How did you get there?"
It's cool to be force those quiet moments to reflect, because I think that, you know, we're losing a lot of that now that we have the ability to, you know, constantly be looking on our phones or whatever. That like, there's not those times of just like sheer boredom where you're just able to daydream.
Yeah, I love being able to take the time, and this COVID era has provided the time to reflect, and I think most of the time when we're asked to do that, we're only asked about our day jobs. Like that's the path we have to justify all the time, is why do you do the thing you do from 9 to 5? And so we can all tell that story and talk about the highlights in a way that like promotes our careers and keeps us moving forward. You know, this podcast in part came, the idea came from, I drew a mind map. I only started listening to podcasts a few years ago. And so I said, okay, so from the West Wing Weekly, like I listened to that, and then that got me into this. And then I looked at my favorite podcast is How Did This Get Made, which is a comedy movie podcast. And then I looked at all of the live shows I've gone to, the movies I watched for those, the guests they had, you know, so I saw Joe Mandy on stage with them in Los Angeles. So I watched his comedy special, and Tawny Newsome was there. And so now I'm watching her shows. And just the exploration of content you can make through one piece of media is where I started. But it's also so true with, I just think anything we do has a story of how we, you know, sometimes the story is Wire Cutter told me to buy the thing, right? Like Wire Cutter did tell me to buy this microphone. But I bought the microphone because I did a mind map about a podcast that I really love. But yeah, this has been a fascinating story. Is there
thank you.
Anything that I didn't ask you that's still on your list that you wanted to make sure to say?
If people are interested in, you know, just kind of hearing about some new music, you know, they can check out my website. It's djsparklebomb.com. I've tried to keep it as easy as possible. You know, you land on the homepage, you see all of the mixtapes. There's three words describing what the vibe is of that. So, I think that'll help direct your interests. You know, if you're more into hip hop, if you're more into electronic or indie, you'll see, you know, different things for there. And it's really just, you know, it's my invitation to provide you with your new favorite artists. And so everything's linked up, and it's pretty easy to explore. So, you know, I think that's, and if you like what you're hearing, you can, on my homepage at the bottom, you can sign up for a mailing list. And I only mail you or email you when I have something new coming out. So you're not getting spammed or anything like that.
I can assure people it's not spam. It's good to be a sparkler. Great. So people can go to sparklebomb.com, check out these mixtapes. Great. Well, thank you so much for spending time talking about DJing.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. This was super fun.
Thank you for listening to Finding Favorites with Leah Jones. Please make sure to subscribe and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Now, go out and enjoy your favorite things.